Accession number 20367, Reel 1.
Brigadier Ryan, Reel 1, where were you born, please?
I was born in Shoebriness, Essex.
Which year was this?
1926.
Did you grow up and have your schooling at Shoebriness?
No. I was sent to boarding school in 1937-38 at St John's, Beaumont, which was a prep school for Beaumont College, and I remained there as a boarder until early 1944 when I joined the army.
Had you had any experiences in the Second World War before that?
Well, after that, after I left school, I joined the army and went out to the Far East and saw the very end of the war in the Far East as part of an Indian artilleryman.
What did you see of the very end of the war?
Just the very back areas in an Indian medium regiment, just over the Brahmaputra, and then after the 15th of August, we all came back into India again.
Had you been in any bombing of England by the German Air Force?
Yes. While I was at school, bombs were dropped in between Beaumont College and the prep school, but no damage was done.
Where is Beaumont College?
It's in Old Windsor, Berks.
And which unit were you with the Indian Army?
I was with a unit that fairly constantly changed its number, but it started off as 16th Indian Medium Regiment, and then on partition, it became 38th Pakistan Medium Regiment, and I remained with them until I left Pakistan in January 1947.
Did impending partition have any effect on you?
Yes, enormous. The regiment to which I'd been posted consisted of a Madrasi battery and a Punjabi Musliman battery. Before partition, we lost the Madrasi battery, we took on another PM battery and crossed the border up into Pakistan, going to a small gunner station called Campbellpur, which was just north of Rawalpindi. While I was there, and over the period of partition and immediately afterwards, I was sent in command of a party of 20 PMs from the regiment to go down to the border between India and Pakistan to search through camps to see if we could find the soldiers' families from our regiment. Most of our soldiers' families came from Poonch, which was just below Kashmir and just above India in that piece of land there. I was there for some time, and on a subsequent occasion, I was present or had to clean up after a convoy of Sikhs being evacuated from Campbellpur were massacred by Punjabi Musliman on their way to safety. I was also, perhaps my final acts there, I commanded a train which patrolled the railway line in front of subsequent evacuations to make sure that the line hadn't been cut and that there were no hostile people on the line. The biggest problems we had were not always with local people, but with tribesmen who crossed the river at Attock, usually, or just below, and raided into the Punjab. They were, of course, violently anti-Hindu.
What did the cleaning up involve?
It involved moving down a column of about 15 or 20 buses, all of which were empty, and their complement of mostly women and children dragged out and butchered, and lifting them off the road and into the back of 3-ton lorries to take them back to Campbellpore for them to be burnt, cremated. And I did this with a party of 20 Punjabi Muslim soldiers. I suppose there were about 300 bodies, perhaps a little more.
How did the soldiers react to that?
They wouldn't have wanted to have done it unless I did it with them. But because I worked with them, they were very good, and they buckled to, and we did the job.
Had any of the Sikhs survived?
I remember one baby surviving. That was all I remember.
Unharmed?
No, cut.
When was this?
This must have been post-partition, and partition was August 1940. I get my dates right.
It was
47. Must have been August 47. Yes, that must have been about it. August 47, and it was after partition.
Did you feel very disturbed about having to do this?
No. At the time, I think because I was young, I didn't feel disturbed about having to do it. But subsequently, months later when I came home, I had nightmares about it. Didn't last very long, and I don't think there's been any residual worries about it since.
Did it change your attitudes?
No. I think I was very free of attitudes about almost anything. I don't think people had attitudes in my day, if you'll forgive me saying that. I was a soldier, and by that time almost a professional soldier, and I did what I had to do. I still felt very drawn towards Indian soldiers, both Indian and Pakistanis, and have remained so since. I don't think I felt any great sense of anger or anything like that about the people who'd perpetrated these things. I don't think people of my age in that time had those feelings. I'm having to slightly extemporize here because I hadn't thought about this before.
And then after that, you were protecting such convoys?
Yes, for a short while, until Christmas of 47, when the last white officers and senior ranks came home from Pakistan. I don't know what happened in India. They remained. But in Pakistan, the last white faces came home, and the last train out from Rawalpindi to Karachi was called Paleface Special 2, I remember. And we came down on that and then flew home from Karachi.
Could you tell what your soldiers thought about partition?
Yes, they thought that the only people who talked about it really were the VCOs, the Subedar Major, the Jemadar Major. And the Subedar Major said to me once that for all their faults of British officers, he was sorry they were going because they were always very fair, even though amongst junior officers in wartime a bit ignorant, and he was sorry to see us go.
How was the job of protecting the convoys executed?
We did it by train, and so the refugees were loaded into a train, and the front and rear of the train and a middle carriage were removed, and steel-sided trucks were put in their place, and each truck held a platoon of our soldiers, who were gunners, really. And then in front of the train, a pilot train went, and that consisted of a flat car on which we had a sandbag emplacement with a light machine gun in it, and then the railway engine, and then another steel truck with a platoon of our soldiers in the back. And that went down about 10 minutes ahead of the main train, and it went from Campbellpore down to Rawalpindi, and then they were moved on in a different way from there.
And these were refugees heading eastward?
Yes. So they were mostly Sikhs. There weren't a great number of other Hindus in that part of the country. Mostly the Hindus in that part of the country were Sikhs, and most of the Sikhs had been either professional classes, many policemen, of course, were Sikhs, or they were businessmen, shop owners, and things like that.
Did the Sikhs seem grateful towards you for what you were doing?
I think they were absolutely numbed by the whole experience. I don't remember them expressing any feelings towards us at all. I think they saw us as part of the problem.
Part of the problem?
Well, if you remember, Mountbatten had been sent out to effect the independence of India and Pakistan, and he set up, from memory, a six-month limit on what he saw would otherwise be interminable Indian negotiations. And I think the Indian civil population blamed him and the British government for the subsequent carnage. I don't know fairly, but I think that was their attitude. But this didn't manifest itself with unpleasantness towards people like ourselves. We were still treated, I think, the usual courteously, but distantly, probably.
Did you see any Muslim columns travelling westward?
No. I think they must have all come across at Lahore, or thereabouts, and dispersed in the area of Jalandhar or somewhere like that. They didn't come up as far as Asilatak and Campbellpore.
Any other memories from the period of partition?
No, not memorable memories.
What happened to you next?
I then came home, and I was posted to 5 RHA on Salisbury Plain. 5 RHA were the support regiment, in those days called the Depot Regiment for the School of Artillery, and I joined them in about March 1948, as a subaltern. I was the GPO, or gun position officer, to a battery called G Battery Mercer's Troop. And I remained with that battery, and latterly with RHQ as assistant adjutant for 4 years. Subsequently, during the 4 years, moving to Germany.
What were duties like on Salisbury Plain at that time?
They were super. We fired a lot. We fired 4 and sometimes 5 days a week in support of courses at the School of Artillery. This was mostly course shooting, as it was called, C-O-U-R-S-E. So this was in support of OP parties at the OP observing fire, and we would go out at about, we would parade at 7 o'clock in the morning and move off at 7:30 and be in action somewhere on the edge of the range by 8:15, ready to commence firing at 8:30. And we'd continue firing throughout the day with a short break for lunch until probably 3:30 or 4 o'clock, when we would come home, clean the guns, and disperse for our normal duties.
Can you tell me how you came to be involved in the Korean War, please?
Yes. 5RHA moved out as part of 6 Armoured Division to Germany in 1951, or we moved in 1951, and I knew my tour of duty was ending because I was approaching my 27th birthday when I would be promoted to captain and would not be allowed to remain in horse artillery on promotion. You have to earn your promotion at each rank. So I knew that from January 1953, I would be liable for posting. And so in about October, November 52, I started agitating to go to Korea, which had started sometime earlier, 51.
How did your agitations take form?
It's in the best possible way. I phoned up the man who had been adjutant when I first became assistant adjutant, who was now a DAAG in AG6, which was the gunner postings branch, and said, do you think you could get me posted to Korea? And he said, very difficult, but I'll try. And it worked.
When and how did you get the posting?
I think it must have come by letter from AG6 and warned me about Christmas time that I'd be due for posting. So I went home and had some leave and then went off from England.
What preparations did you have to make to go out there?
I had to get some new kit, I remember. And one of the things I had to get were a tropical kit, which was issued at Woolwich, and a new form of webbing equipment, which was dark green, which I hadn't seen before. And I had a number of injections and inoculations.
And then?
I couldn't hear that.
And then?
And then I went, embarked for Korea sometime in the new year of 1953 in, I think, the Asturias, which was then, I believe, had been a German vessel before the war and taken over as a prize ship. I'm not certain about that. And then we did the long trip out via the Suez Canal and stopped at various places, Colombo in India and Singapore, where we dropped drafts off en route, and then finally arrived in Kure in Japan, where we disembarked and went to the British base there, which the gunner element, of course, was called a holding battery. It was just a battery for holding officers and men. And then within about a fortnight or so, I went up by air, I think, to Korea, to Seoul, and then on by truck to the Commonwealth Division, HQRA, the Commonwealth Division.
What did you find there?
The CRA, who was called Brigadier Peter Gregson, who interviewed me at 10 o'clock the next morning, I remember. He was a marvellous officer, an old horse artilleryman, who I think had served in Mercers during the war. And he told me that I was to join a very newly arrived medium battery that had in fact only just arrived, and from Hong Kong, where it had been put together and posted at very short notice, and had arrived in Korea with a number of officers in it who were not very experienced, and I was to replace one of them as a troop commander of A troop. So within a day, I think, I joined 74 Medium Battery, the Battle Axe Company. The next bit of what I'm going to say is perhaps a bit sensitive. Do you mind if I, or do you want to cut things out?
That's all right.
Not only was I to replace a troop commander, whom was a nice chap, but I don't think had ever served in field artillery before. He was an ACAC chap. But at the same time, a battery commander who was commanding 248 Light Battery in 61st Light Regiment was cross-posted across and to replace the battery commander of 74 Battery. So there were two officers sacked. Not entirely their fault. The problem was this. The three field regiments had arrived in what was known as the Jamestown position, which was the final position of the Commonwealth Division, following Operation Commando in the autumn of the year before, and had gradually dug themselves in and made themselves comfortable over a long period of time. 74 Battery arrived and was expected to be operational in 48 hours, including digging itself in and digging a road onto its position, putting down hard standings, digging dugouts, all the sort of things that the field regiments had had several months to do, and the Medium Battery, inexperienced, many new officers, was given about 4 or 5 days to do. And the BC and one of the troop commanders weren't really up to it. And so a new battery commander was posted in, Major A.J. Batten. He was a very interesting person. He had been in B Battery, 1RHA, throughout the war, and had risen from trumpeter to battery captain, collecting a DCM on the way. An almost an impossible task, a battlefield promotion, in other words. He was a thoroughly experienced gunner officer, a very tough one, with very, very high standards of behaviour and performance. And he restored the situation of the battery when he arrived, and within days the battery was making great headway into getting its position prepared, and within 4 or 5 days from memory the guns came up from Pusan. Up to then they couldn't come because there were no platforms for them to stand on. We were digging into a shallow valley that was paddy field. This had to be flattened and filled with hardcore. So the guns then came up, and the Medium Battery was superimposed on the divisional artillery. That is to say, it wasn't affiliated to any of the three brigades in the Commonwealth Division, but its artillery was superimposed on the fire of the three field regiments. This meant that it didn't have its own OPs. And so, right from the word go, we provided a relief OP for 20th Field Regiment. And I was the first to occupy a relief OP on point 131, which was towards the left centre of the Commonwealth Division sector. And at that time, the Commonwealth Division infantry and armour were out of the line, having a rest, leaving the artillery behind, and the 2nd United States Division had taken over the line in place of the Commonwealth Division. So the first people I supported in Korea were the Netherland Battalion, who were a part of 2nd United States Division. Do you know all this? Yes.
Well, it's in the history, isn't it?
That's right. So I supported them for a while. And we came up against a problem straight away, and this I'm sure you'll be familiar with. The Commonwealth and the Americans had serious differences in their tactics of defence, and I've no doubt in attack, but we didn't practice that in Korea. But in defence, the Americans relied on an outpost line of resistance, and behind that, a main line of resistance. These were called the OPLR and the MLR. The OPLR could be 2,000 yards in front of the MLR. It could be a shorter distance. The theory was that the outpost line of resistance absorbed any attack by Chinese or Koreans, and having alarmed the main line of resistance, drew back into the main line of resistance, which in the American case was continuous. In practice, because of, and here I'm on shaky ground, but I think because of American stubbornness, or maybe pride, no American commander wanted to lose any point on his outpost line of resistance. And so, the Chinese regularly attacked the forward positions, which could either be a company or a forward platoon, and overran them, taking men prisoners and killing what was there. Then at great cost to the American forces, these outposts were recovered by counterattack, sometimes involving whole battalions to do it, involving more casualties. When I arrived and went to support the Dutch battalion, they too had an outpost line of resistance, and the outpost in my battalion area, or certainly my company area, was a platoon post on a little hill called New Day, which was about 500 yards, we would have said in those days, in front of the main line of resistance, the MLR. And shortly after I arrived, this was overrun, and many Dutchmen were lost. This was something the Commonwealth Division didn't believe in at all. And so when the Commonwealth Division got back into the line, all the outpost line of resistance were dismantled. In our case, the OPLR positions were, I believe, mined and booby-trapped. Certainly we never went on them at all, in case Chinese or Koreans got up there, North Koreans got up there. And we fought our battle from our battalion positions, which were usually three companies up, one in reserve. Each company had all-round defence. The line wasn't continuous. There were gaps in it, protected by mines and wire. And at night, we sent out quite small standing patrols, three, four men, about 200 yards, 100 yards ahead of our own wire, just to listen for approaching Chinese up to anything. We also employed quite large fighting patrols when we felt there was a proper target for them, something that needed looking at or something that needed shaking up. We didn't suffer the same sort of casualties as a result. I don't believe the Commonwealth nations would have put up with the casualties that the Americans put up with.
What are your next memories?
That was very early on. The next memories, before the Commonwealth Division moved back into the...